There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All these guys who run these organizations who talk about analytics, they have one thing in common. They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get the game.
Welcome to VSiN's Hardwood Handicappers.
As you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek.
Now here's your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
What up, folks? Welcome in. We got another edition of Hardwood Handicappers. We're coming to an end, of course, of the show. We might have one more Hardwood Handicappers next Sunday, or this might be the last episode of Hardwood Handicappers. So take that as you will. We've got a good show on tap. Coming up at the very bottom of this hour, Tom Burns, SiriusXM, Mad Dog Sports Radio, and NBA Handicapper will be with us. We'll see how he views what's going on in the NBA Finals, as it has now been tied up at two games apiece. Matt Eumanns is going to join us in the second hour. Got to watch Game 4 with Eumanns on Friday night, so we'll see what his takeaways were. If we, you know, saw the same thing, we're watching the same screen. And then, of course, our weekly hit with Daniel Alvari, WNBA handicapper and host of the LA CityCast, who will join us right at 4:45 p.m. Pacific time. With that, let's dive in. And so before we look ahead to Game 5, which will be tomorrow, miss on the NBA's part to a certain extent, not having the game tonight. I thought it was going to be today. Just kind of felt like it. We've had a lot of games on Sunday. But regardless, let's go back before we go forward. 107-97, your final score, as the Golden State Warriors, and namely Steph Curry, tie up the series at two games apiece after a win in Boston. And that's where I wanted to start. And if you've been listening to the podcast that we've been doing after these games and looking ahead, and I've been putting these up after every single one of these finals games on the Hardwood Handicappers podcast feed, I'm going to open this show in a very similar way in which I did that show, which is there is no way that you can watch that game and not think that Steph Curry is one of the best basketball players of all time. And that's where I think you have to start here. This was a single-handed, we are not losing this game. I am one of the best players you've seen on a basketball court. We are going to win this, tie this up, take back home court, and we refuse to lose. And Curry was brilliant. 43 points, 14 to 26 shooting from the floor, 7 to 14 from three-point range, had 10 rebounds, 4 assists. His second half was even better because he scores 24 points, 7 of 11 from the floor, 5 of 6 from three-point range. And in the second half alone, Steph Curry, who is now the odds-on favorite to an NBA Finals MVP, was a plus 18 in the last two quarters of play of Game 4. And it, like, when you watched him, and I'm not one for narrative, right? I have sometimes, not logic, but like cold hard data is the way that I view things. If you've watched enough of the show, you kind of realize that. I've also admitted that it's very much a weakness of mine, right, when it comes to poo-pooing certain spots in situations in the association and in other sports as well when I'm handicapping it. But I tire of the narrative that Steph Curry has something left to prove. Steph Curry has nothing left to prove. He is one of the best basketball players that has ever taken the court in the NBA. I'm also not one for ranking these guys. I was asked, like, where do you rank him among the top? I don't care. He's one of the best players of all time, bar none. I don't think there's really any question about it. His style of play has changed the way the NBA game is played today. He is one of the best shooters we have ever seen. No, he is the best shooter we've ever seen. He's just one of the best basketball players of all time. And he's got that championship DNA, that medal. But I just thought you needed to start there. And we have ESPN stats and info. This is from Friday night. Again, we're talking about history being made. Curry just doing it over and over again. Steph Curry with the 43 points, 10 rebounds in that Game 4 win at age 34 years and 88 days. The second oldest player in NBA Finals history to record a 40-10 game behind only LeBron James in 2020. He was 35 years and 284 days old when that occurred. Curry's brilliant, man. He's absolutely brilliant. His 23.5 field goal attempts per game, the most he's averaged in a series since 2019. He has scored 32.6% of the Warriors' total points scored in this series. Don't think there's really any dispute from there. So, with that, moving forward, as we kind of start the show today, I wanted to break down Friday from two different perspectives. First off, the Warriors' perspective, because they went out there and they won that game. And then the second perspective is, of course, the Celtics' perspective and how they move forward in adjusting from what happened in that contest. So first off, let's start what I think is the main takeaway here, which is Steve Kerr clearly tinkering and throwing, I think, everything at the wall to see what sticks. He started the game, if you remember, the opening lineup, Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Green, and Porter. But that lineup was outscored by about 7 points in the first few minutes. And I think clearly when you saw Kerr start that game, he wanted to stick with Draymond. And adding Otto Porter Jr. to the starting lineup in game four was clearly a sign that I want to keep Draymond out there, but I need some sort of offensive outlet. I can't put Kevon Looney out there as well because my offense gets heavily slanted to one side of the floor in terms of Boston just not really respecting two of the options out of the five on that end. And it didn't really work. So what happens? You go to Looney and place a Porter immediately. That was about the 7:22 mark of the first quarter. And from there on out, Looney finishes his time on the floor in the first quarter. They outscore the Celtics by 5 points for the rest of the fourth. And that would kind of be the theme as you get a bit later in the show. If you fast forward to the fourth quarter of game four on Friday, and this is where it really starts the show. Celtics lead 90-86. Kerr takes Draymond and Bielitsa off of the floor in that fourth quarter. He rolls with a lineup of Curry, Poole, Thompson, Wiggins, Looney, and Golden State outscores Boston by 7 points over the next 4 minutes to take a 97-94 lead without Draymond Green on the floor. You saw that big shift. And then, this is the best part about what Kerr did, and this is also, you know, we take these shots all the time, right, when we're talking about narratives and everything, and the 2 years prior, everybody, the Warriors, look, they stink, no Kevin Durant, Kerr has no idea what he's doing, he's just been the benefit of having great players. Kerr has really shown his chops throughout this postseason, and in this series, Kerr then goes offense-defense down the stretch, replacing Green for defensive possessions with Poole for offensive possessions, going back and forth, and it was brilliant. And the Warriors, who were minus 40 in the previous three games in the fourth quarter, win the fourth quarter 28-19, and they win the game. So let's hear from Draymond first, because this is a pretty big blow to a guy who has been a key part of a championship squad, and he gave voice to it after the game on Friday night, saying like, yeah, man, I'm never thrilled to come out of a tight game.
Definitely never thrilled coming out of the game with 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter in a must-win game. I'm not going to sit here and act like I was thrilled. I'm a competitor, but at the end of the day, if that's what coach decides, then you roll with it. And, you know, I had to keep my head in the game. And, you know, whenever I went back in, try to make some plays. And so that was just my mindset. You know, don't make too much of it. I've always been of the on the bandwagon of, you know, if you got something that's rolling, you stick with it.
And it's going to be fascinating to see what happens as we move forward in the series and what Kerr wants to do. But I think it was also necessary that you made this move. I mean, look at some of the numbers behind this, especially on the offensive end of the floor. Draymond has had absolutely nothing. We know that he's averaged 4 points per game in this series. He's shooting 30.7% from the floor, or as total. In this entire series, he is 6 of 26 in terms of his field goal attempts. And when you watch, Boston's got no respect for him on the offensive end. They consistently help off of him. They can rotate back with relative ease. There was a great sequence where it was a pick and roll with Draymond Green. Green rolls to the basket, and you see that Al Horford, and this is from game four, he goes and he does the whole thing where he's dropping off ever so slightly, helps a little bit more to, I think it was Poole who ran the pick and roll. But he easily scrams back to find Draymond Green, contest a shot within 4 feet of the basket, and of course, he misses the shot. Now, Draymond is not all negative. He does still have his value as a passer. In fact, in this last game, he had 8 assists. He was really good when he got his time on the floor in the fourth quarter in terms of impacting Golden State defensively, too. But if you're talking about the shifting role now for Draymond and juxtaposing it with how they're going to start to use Kevon Looney, I'm really interested to see how Kerr uses this going forward. And let's hear from Steve Kerr, because, and this is why he gets credit for things, right? This is what I like in a professional sense. You never know everything. And sometimes you like to admit when you're wrong. And Kerr, after the game, even spoke to it, said, yeah, Looney's important, and I didn't even play him enough in game three.
Yeah, Loon is just crucial to everything we do. He's our best screener, our best rebounder, one of our smartest players. He's always in the right spot. You know, he made, I thought, the biggest bucket of the game when after Horford made the three from the corner, Draymond made the the pass out of the pocket to Loon. He finished with that left hand. So Loon has just grown leaps and bounds, you know, this year. He's been really good for us over the years. But this year in particular, he's taken a leap to a point where, you know, he's just you know, irreplaceable for us. And he's played in every game, and he's a guy we count on. I didn't play him enough in game three. You know, that was my mistake. So it was important to get him out there, and he had a huge impact on the game.
Looney had a Warriors best in terms of plus-minus in that game four win for the Warriors. Yes, even better than Steph Curry. But I think that Kerr brings up the most important part about Looney's ability early part of that clip, which is rebounding. If you go back to game three, remember, the Warriors got absolutely crushed in that game three loss on the boards. I got out rebounded. They got a rebound of 47-31. The Celtics had 15 offensive rebounds in that game. You go to game four on Friday, Looney on the floor, taking a whole bunch of minutes on the floor. Looney, 11 rebounds, 4 offensive. He and Wiggins combined for 27, and they had 55 rebounds as a whole, the Golden State Warriors. It was a really big adjustment, and it's an adjustment that paid dividends for Steve Kerr. So what does it mean as we head into game five on Friday? Well, I think it means a lot. I think it obviously means that more minutes for Looney, of course, are in order, and we'll talk about how that affects the player prop market as we get into that in the next hour. And he's deserving of it. But I also wonder what it means for Draymond in terms of his minutes. Looney's minutes went up. Draymond's minutes went down. If you look at the starting core, at least that was out there on the floor, Otto Porter Jr., we won't include him, but at least of the core group that they have out there on the floor, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins all played over 40 minutes. Draymond only played 33. And we talked about what happened in the fourth with some of the rotations. And you wonder, like, as you talk about this, who's in the starting lineup on Monday night when we talk about the Warriors as a 3.5-point favorite with a total of 212 in Game 5? Back in San Francisco, do you still roll out there with Otto Porter Jr.? Do you dare say that Draymond Green plays under 30 minutes in this game against the Boston Celtics? If that's what it takes to win, will Steve Kerr do that? He's already shown that he's willing to come back off of that. And on the flip side, because we're going to get to Boston on the other side of this, with Ime...
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Udoka, and the way that he has kind of staggered Robert Williams and Al Horford in terms of their minutes as this series has gone along, do we now see that these two bigs will play together a little bit more often? On Friday, they were plus six when both Horford and Williams were on the floor together, but they didn't play together on the floor after the 7:46 mark of the third quarter. So there's so many different things that come out of these adjustments and wrinkles. So on the other side, let's talk a little bit more about the Celtics side of things. Can they win this series still, no longer having home court, and continuing to struggle in an area that they have struggled all year long? That would be crunch time. We'll talk about that. We'll dive into those numbers and much more. And remember, bottom of this hour, Tom Burns, SiriusXM, is going to join us. Don't go anywhere. Hardwood Handicap.
To VSiN's Hardwood Handicappers. Now here's your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
What's up, folks? All right, so we're kind of taking a deep dive in here on what happened in Game 4 and how we're going to spin these forward in terms of this series. And I'm really excited. Like, this has been, I think it's been an awesome NBA Finals up to this point. Regardless of what happens in terms of a final result, we got the series that I think a lot of us wanted once we started to see that the conference finals were going to get set. And I think it has paid off. These games have been pretty good outside of a blowout in Game 2. These have been games that have been worth paying attention to. The adjustments have been a lot of fun. Really good performances on both sides. So we talked a lot about the Warriors' perspective and about the adjustment to go big, and Kevon Looney getting a little bit of a bigger role here for the Golden State Warriors. So let's talk about Boston, because I think the first question you ask after watching Game 4 is, what the hell, I was about to say something else, happened? Get a little comfortable, you know what I mean? Went out partying last night, a little too comfortable with that. But what in the world happened to Boston's offense in the second half? Going through some of the numbers, Celtics offensive rating 95.6 in the second half of that loss to the Golden State Warriors on Friday. 86.4 was their offensive rating in the fourth quarter. For those who don't know off the top of their head in terms of the scale of offensive ratings, I will tell you that 86.4 is absolute trash. So it's not very good. If you want the more traditional metrics, they went 7-21 from the floor in the fourth quarter, the Celtics did. 4-13 from beyond the arc. And the offense just kind of devolved into this weird stagnant mess. Isolation possessions, little effort to get the ball moving. Marcus Smart, you know, the meme, or every time the joke comes up on social media, like, yeah, it's Marcus Smart time or whatever. It was Marcus Smart time apparently at times in the fourth quarter. And in fact, stagnant was actually the word that Tatum used to describe the offense in the final quarter. So let's hear from Jason Tatum on what exactly went wrong with their offense in the fourth quarter.
It's tough. I mean, you got to give them credit. They played well. You know, they hit some big shots, things like that. You know, we obviously felt like we had put ourselves in a position to win the game. And, you know, it's a lot of things that we wish we'd have done differently. You know, especially on the offensive end, I think we just got way too stagnant late in the fourth from everybody.
And this is kind of what happens with Boston, right? I mean, this is why when you watch them fail to execute in the fourth quarter, at least for me, I think this is why you come away from a lot of these Celtics games thinking more, man, Boston really shot themselves in the foot, as opposed to, man, Team X really forced Boston into some of these poor looks. When you have a play in which Marcus Smart has the ball at the top of the key and they run off 14 seconds of the shot clock just doing this, right, like pointing and trying to get guys like, hey, come over here. No, set a screen over here. And then it just evolves into, you know what, kick it to Tatum. Let's see what he can do with it. And it just ends with Tatum trying to shoot over a defender. Sometimes those shots go in. A lot of the times they don't, though. And I think that's kind of what irritates you. And Al Horford kind of put this pretty well, I thought, especially at the back end of what you're going to hear from this clip of Horford, where he says, like, we just took possessions for granted.
Yeah, I felt like we took possessions for granted. You know, I don't feel like, you know, we executed as well as we did the previous game. You know, we really can't do that. So, definitely need to, be better there down the stretch. Just a little more locked in as a group.
And as you kind of go forward in that clip too, it's weird because, well, it's not even weird. He's followed up with the question essentially of like, why does this keep happening? And he laughs and he's like, you know, this is what we've been doing. We put our backs up against the wall and, you know, this is the Celtics. And he's right. This is what the Celtics do. But it's also not really hilarious when you think about the situations that a talented team continues to put themselves in. It's the problem with this team. And it's one of the things that I mentioned as somebody who had picked the Celtics, all of those things, where I'm invested at. One of the things that you knew that if they're going to lose this series, that was going to kill them was their performance in clutch minutes. And if you've watched the show, I brought this up before about Boston. A refresher, though, is that this team has not been very good in clutch minutes. One more time, for those who don't know, clutch minutes again, game within 5 points on either side with five or fewer minutes left to go. So far in the postseason, the Celtics have played 12 games in which there have been clutch minutes. And yes, the team is 7-5 straight up in those 12 games. However, they have a negative 14.2 net rating in those games. So yes, they've won 7 of the 12, but they've been terrible and actually won pretty much against themselves, right, in terms of winning games that went to clutch minutes. And again, this extends back to the regular season. In the regular season, the Celtics, 26th in clutch net rating, they are outscored by 9.5 points per 100 possessions in clutch minutes in the regular season. They went 13-22 straight up in the games that entered clutch minutes in the NBA regular season. And in five, so it's a really small sample size, but in just five clutch minutes in this series, majority of which happened on Friday against Golden State, they have an offensive rating of, get this, 42.9. They didn't score a single point in the clutch minutes that were played on Friday. They went 0-6 from the floor. Meanwhile, the Warriors, 5-8, 2-3 from three-point range, 3 assists, 7 rebounds. They completely outplayed the Boston Celtics in those clutch minutes, and it speaks to having a creator and a player like Curry on the floor. And it's also what this team is. We've heard about all these numbers for Boston, and we remember the positive ones. Right? On Monday, if they win, they can improve to 8-0 straight up and 8-0 against the spread coming off of a loss. But how about some of these other numbers for Boston? After a straight-up win in the postseason, I've got them down as 6-8 straight up, 6-7-1 against the spread. It's a cover rate of 42.9%. If you include the regular season as well, we're talking about a 38-27 straight-up record. Fine. 11 games above 500, but 31-30-4. So 31 wins or 31 covers, 39 covers, 4 pushes against the spread. That's a 50.8% mark. So again, you're down if you're talking about that from that perspective. And they just consistently do this. And I thought Tatum had a pretty good answer to a certain extent. It was kind of funny, but they asked him, like, essentially, why do you keep putting yourself in this position?
I mean, we don't do this shit on purpose. I promise you we don't. We trying as hard as we can, but we do, like, there's certain things that we got to clean up, obviously, turnovers, movement on the offensive end. Would we have liked to win today and be up 3-1? That would have been the best case scenario, but it's the finals. And, you know, in the art of competition, you know, they came here with, you know, no feeling like they had to win. I mean, you know, it wasn't easy. And I think that's kind of the beauty of it. That is, it is not going to be easy, and it shouldn't be. We both want it, and, you know, we got to go take it.
So I mentioned, and he kind of laughs it off there. Horford kind of laughed it off in the answer that I was talking about, media availability after the game. And I guess there is, you're allowed to have a certain confidence if you're the Celtics when you look at some of the numbers and you realize that this is a team that, again, is undefeated in the postseason, coming off of the straight-up loss, as we know, 27-11 straight up, 26-12 ATS this season as a whole, coming off of a straight-up loss. So again, they have covered 68.4% of their games after they lose a game. So I guess there is built up a certain confidence after you consistently do this, right? Put yourself in a bad position, but then dig yourself out of it. You did it against the Milwaukee Bucks where you're down 3-2. You're down 3-2, you win two straight, you win that series. You do it when you're taking on the Miami Heat. You're up 3-2, you lose at home, you win a game 7 over in Miami. So when you consistently, you know, deliver in these situations, I guess there's a reason why this team seems pretty not lax, because that's not really fair to them, because that paints a picture of a team that doesn't really care. But there's a confidence in this situation where now you have to go on the road at least to win at least one more road game. Again, a situation which they have been very good. They have played very well away from home in the postseason and, again, in the season as a whole. 31-21 straight up, 33-17-2 against the spread. That's a 66% cover rate away from home if you include regular and postseason for the Celtics. But at the same time, right, you can't keep playing with fire, and every time you don't get burned, like, man, I'm great at this. Eventually, right, you're going to get burned, to use the cliche, in its entirety. So it brings us to Monday night, and it brings us to Game 5. Celtics catching 3.5, total of 212.5. And we'll have more on the total and from that perspective, too, because I do feel like this series is starting to take shape in terms of the way that these totals are going to be played. But all of this, as we've kind of recapped Game 4 to a really good extent, what does this mean as we spin this forward? And I think you start with where we began, which is size. Size is the first thing that I think you come to this matchup with. We've established that Looney is necessary for the Golden State Warriors to be successful. Does Kerr start him on Monday? What does he do with Draymond? Do I dare suggest that he doesn't start Draymond Green, right? Like, if you're talking about putting Looney out there and wanting to get off to your best start, Looney has been one of your best players in this series. Do you try that? Do you, not desperate, but do you tinker that much if you're Steve Kerr? So what does that look like? And with Looney on the floor, how do those lineups look? I don't think you start with the same lineup as in Game 4, because that one got outscored by 7 points. Otto Porter Jr. played less than 20 minutes, and it wasn't really that successful. And if that's the case, if you're looking at this from the Celtics standpoint, do we see more of these dual lineups with Al Horford and Robert Williams? Also, speaking of Williams, is he even healthy? If you guys remember, and this is, I had to go back and I was watching, and you realize this, that with the 3:41 mark left in the fourth quarter, Robert Williams hobbled off the floor, and he wasn't playing for the rest of that quarter because he wasn't fully healthy. And Ime Udoka, again today in availability, said that it wasn't really anything specific that tweaked Williams' knee and that he should be fine and that he's going to be available for Game 5. He'll test it as normal. But Williams has been incredible in these last two games. 15 points, 22 rebounds, 6 blocks, a combined plus 27 in those two games. So I'm going to have more on this in situationally in those road numbers for the Celtics, but those are kind of like the two main points as you start here. And we haven't even talked about Boston defensively, which has still shown some real consistency, even in these losses, specifically in one area of the floor that we'll talk about. When we come back, we'll build more on that. We'll also touch on the NBA draft, because DraftKings are starting to add more and more props to their market, and there's some interesting props that are up there that we can attack as the NBA draft is right around the corner.
/store.
Welcome to VSiN's Hardwood Handicappers. Now here's your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
The Major League Baseball season is in full swing, and you can play ball with the Peacock Major League Baseball Sunday Leadoff Challenge. Just draft your players and compete for free up to $10,000 in prizes. Visit DraftKings.com/Peacock for more info. Don't just watch your shows, Peacock them. Terms and conditions and other eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, wanted to kind of put a bow on what we were talking about with Game 5, as we will get back to, of course, all of the analysis for the NBA Finals. So I mentioned kind of going into the break, Boston defensively, and I think it's still very much worth pointing out as we move back to San Francisco. So how do you put this? Like, the Celtics have still been – actually, it's easy way to put it. The Celtics have still been borderline elite when it comes to their defense. And I know a lot of people are going to look at Steph Curry dropping 40 points and going, no, okay, clown, wrong. But it's very true to, like, if you look at this again statistically. Let's look back on Friday night again one more time, right? The offensive numbers for Golden State outside of just Steph Curry's 42 points were actually pretty mundane. From an offensive rating standpoint, 112.6 in non-garbage time minutes. Again, about an average to below average offensive rating in a single game. If you look at it from a half-court perspective, very below average for the Golden State Warriors. In fact, both teams were awful. 83.9 for the Golden State Warriors, 84.3 for the Boston Celtics. The Celtics have actually, in this series, in half-court settings, limited the Golden State Warriors to 93.5 points per 100 plays. That's a really good defensive rating in the half-court to hold an opponent to. And Golden State has gotten their points and their efficient points really in one area of the floor. Technically, it's two, but it's one. It's transition. It's right first action, right when you get the ball over the court. It's a screen for Curry, steps into that space that's provided by that drop coverage, puts up a three and hits it, or it's turnovers that, you know, steals then lead to transition opportunities the other way, and the Warriors again score. So like that, when you look at it from the perspective of how the Warriors are getting their points, that is how they have really won these two games when you look at it. The Celtics, again, when you talk about the looking at this from the perspective of shooting themselves in the foot, it's about limiting turnovers, limiting transition opportunities, because in these half-court settings, the Warriors still have not put forth a consistent effort over the course of these four games. And I think if you're the Celtics, that's what you're really putting your hat, you're leaning on, you're hanging your hat on, whatever cliche you want to use there. We have still, for the course of this series, been a pretty consistent defensive team. We have limited the other opportunities for the players not named Steph Curry. We have been very good in half-court settings, and it's all about maybe tweaking some things here and there when it comes to the coverage of Steph Curry and just limiting the opportunities we give them. 19 points off of turnovers for the Golden State Warriors in a game in which they lost by 10 on Friday night. Those are opportunities that you give up to the opponent. And if you're the Celtics, I think that's how you're kind of approaching this and feeling as you move forward in the series and as you move forward on the road in this series. Also, the last point here, the other thing that is going to get a lot of traction when it comes to analysis of the series. You can hear a lot about, again, the 7-0 mark after a straight-up win and loss, and that'll be the qualification for a lot of the handicap for quite a lot of people. I brought up to you the fact that this is a Celtics team that has played very well on the road, again, covering about 66-67% of their games away from home. To give you numbers how they have operated away from home in the postseason, too, the Celtics, plus 5.1 net rating, a league-leading 8 wins, they're 8-3 straight up, 9-2 against the spread, or, you know, 8-3-1, depending on how you get your numbers. Averaging 113.5 points per 100 possessions in non-garbage time minutes away from home in this postseason. But the most important mark, 108.4 points per 100 possessions in non-garbage time minutes allowed. It's been a team that has responded. So, and it goes back to what we were talking about, the weird kind of nonchalant, like, haha, like, we're going to be fine. We put ourselves in this position all the time. Maybe, and maybe they get out of this series consistently putting themselves in this position. But we'll see if that's the case. But this has been a team that's responded in these spots. You just can't keep putting yourself in those spots because it's not the best position to be in. All right, anyway, with that, we'll get back to that coming up in about 10 minutes from now when Tom Byrne joins us. Let's talk about some other stuff in the NBA because there's other stuff going on, specifically the NBA draft, which is right around the corner. And as the days go along, markets and operators like DraftKings are starting to put some more stuff up for bettors to play around with. So wanted to start with some player draft position stuff. Talk a little bit more about, you know, first overall pick. There's nothing really evolving there. It is worth noting that the first overall selection in terms of the odds, they continue to grow in favor of Jabari Smith. He's now minus 330 to be the first overall pick, and these are up at VSiN.com. You can check the odds there. That's the DraftKings price as well. And it is this is the thing. I was talking about this with Jim Root on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Jim Root, who does a lot of work, of course, three-man weave, Field of 68. When you talk about why this price has gotten so high, there was a report by Jonathan Givony that stated it is believed in the league widely that the Orlando Magic are going to go with Jabari Smith for the first overall selection. Keep in mind, the wording of that report is that executives in the league believe it to be the case. There's nothing that is being reported from inside the Orlando Magic that that is the case. And I would say that as these odds continue to grow on Chet Holmgren, who is widely considered to be the most talented player in this draft, at plus 300, if we're talking plus 350, I would Chet Holmgren and taking him at an inflated plus price is definitely worth it. When you're talking about the implied probability and the difference between those, it's hard to see that Jabari Smith Jr., who's going to be a really good player and maybe an elite 3 and D wing type of guy, is selected first over by Orlando. And I get it, Holmgren and Wendell Carter Jr. and how they fit together and all those dynamics are at play, but at the same time, just from a price perspective, to see the guy who is widely considered to be the most talented prospect in this draft be over $3 to be the first overall selection, position aside, damn position value, right? It's all about just taking the most talented player at this point of the NBA draft, and that's still Chet Holmgren. All right, the other stuff that has been added to the board, though, we now have player draft position props that are available in a couple of spots, and it's very much worth looking at. And there's a couple that I wanted to point out because there's some really intriguing numbers around a few of these guys and where they might end up. So let's start with A.J. Griffin coming out of Duke. Player position prop set at 10.5, heavily shaded to the under at minus 165. Griffin's consensus spot, if you look at all the major mock drafts that are available, seems to be about 8th overall. And Hoops Hype, it's very much a tool worth using. Hoops Hype, the website, actually has done this. They have a draft article up, and I'll tweet it out a little bit later for those who are interested, that has aggregated all of the main mock drafts and has given you an average position for some of these guys. So it does take a little bit of the work off of your shoulders. But if you look at this, according to some of these mocks, highest point in the draft, or I guess lowest, however you phrase it, 12th overall for a guy like Griffin. 5th is the highest draft pick, and you see the draft order right there with the Pistons. Worked out with Portland the other day. It was about 2 days ago. Widely considered to be a lottery pick by scouts around the league, so safely within this top 14 as we look at it. But when you kind of break it down, how likely is it that he goes in the top 10 selections? Because if you look at minus 165 and an implied probability of 62.3%, it doesn't seem, it seems like a little high in that regard. So, for example, if you go under, the Kings do not seem likely to take him. They seem very much tied to Jaden Ivey, which might be the case, or not even Ivey, Keegan Murray. So outside of that, you're talking about 5th Detroit, 6th Indiana, 7th Portland. Rumors that the Kings and the Portland Trailblazers are floating their pick because they want to get out and they want to acquire and establish talent to help their teams, for whatever reason, make a push toward the postseason, much like the Pelicans did. So overall, when you're looking at this, might be good fits for Indiana, New Orleans, and Washington, but I think you'd rather lay like minus 135 on him to go inside the top 10, A.J. Griffin, as opposed to a minus 165, because 135 is more like 57% in terms of implied probability. Seems like a much fairer price for a guy like Griffin and where he's been ending up in some of these mock drafts. So lean to the over on him, just given the fact that it's a higher plus price than it probably should be at this point right now, but nothing definitive. The other guy, and so I started this a couple of weeks ago, where it was judging where you might get a guy in terms of draft position and looking to play under him. One of those guys was Benedict Mathurin, who's coming out of Arizona. Love the kid. Looks fantastic. 6'6", got a super high release on the jump shot, is uber athletic. He can be one of those really, if he shores up his defensive talent, could be a really, really strong player for somebody to grab in the middle of the lottery. And I was thinking like, man, if you're getting him at like 10.5, like A.J. Griffin, I'll be looking to bet that under, and even at a price, you know, that you're laying in the range of like $2 or so. He seems like he's going to be safely inside of the top 10. Well, I'm not the only one, obviously, that's paying attention. Benedict Mathurin's draft position prop opens up at 8.5, shaded to the under at this price at minus 180. Consensus draft position for him has been about seventh. And this is, I think, kind of one of the tighter draft positions that you're going to see on the board. Because I was hoping to get him at the 10.5 mark. And if you look at some of the news behind him, he worked out for Indiana on Friday. This is from the Indy Star, quote, highest ranked known prospect Indiana has brought in, according to that publication. He'd be a beautiful fit for the Pacers. But if you look at it, too, when you're talking about where he could likely go, if you're talking about 8.5, shaded to the under at minus 180, it seems pretty high for a guy that's been mocked at 10th to Washington quite a bit as well. I was willing to lay that price, but when you're talking about 8.5, and really your margin of error is 6, 7, or 8, to say that he's safely inside those top three picks at a minus 180 price, it's a little too rich for my blood. So if it continues to drift, actually the under might be something, or excuse me, the over might be something worth looking at there for a guy like Benedict Mathurin. And we're going to get to more of these. There's really intriguing prospects. Dyson Daniels has been really, sounds like skyrocketing up boards, the G League Unite kid. Jalen Duren, who at one point seemed like a lock within the top 10, but recent news about how a team that seems like a fit for him in Portland is, I think, changed that a little bit. And the star that everybody knows at this point, Johnny Davis, is it what is he eating in the Taco Bell commercials? Is it like a chalupa or something like that? He's got a draft position problem. How good is your agent? The dude is like a fringe top 10 pick, and he's in every single Taco Bell commercial that's playing during the NBA Finals. We'll talk about him, Shaden Sharp, and others, maybe a little bit more in the second hour. But on the other side, Tom Byrne, SiriusXM, Mad Dog Sports Radio, is going to join us. Fantastic NBA handicapper. Get his thoughts on Game 5.
/store.
Welcome to VSiN's Hardwood Handicappers. Now here's your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, before you hit any button on your app, make sure you visit VSiN.com. Check out the current betting splits data. That's right. We have all the information up there. You want to find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. Check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits another way. VSiN is here to make you smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at vsin.com. All right, let's welcome in. Tired of hearing my voice for a while? Well, good. This guy's got some pipes on him. Tom Byrne, host SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio, NBA handicapper, and now WNBA handicapper. We dabble in WNBA talk here on the show, Tom. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I heard you had Danielle on. I might need a couple pointers. No, I went with the Wings +4. They lost by 5, so that's always fun. It's good to get that.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Feel it back. And then the Liberty, they took it home pretty easily. +7 or 7.5, and they lost by 2. They were winning the entire game. You know, it's funny, when the NBA Finals start to hit, I get that feeling like I need a little bit more. So I said, why not? I'm going to create a WNBA model, found some sites, took some time. I don't think the wife was too thrilled. What are you doing? Oh, I'm, WNBA modeling is not going to be a good excuse. But why not? There's worse things in the world to do, JVT.
That's right. Now, I was going to make a joke, something about like women's basketball and modeling, and would your wife really be okay with that? But it would be a corny joke anyway. All right, so let's focus. all right, so let's talk about this though. So we always remember what we saw last, and on Friday night after the goal, after Steph Curry just puts on an incredible performance, arguably his best playoff performance of all time, and he ties the Boston Celtics. I say he, not the Warriors. He ties the Celtics in this series 2-2. I got a lot of they're dead. Told you, Celtics, it's over. You're done. And I'm like, really, is that the case? So where are you at now? We are through two games here, And I kind of just feel, Tom, the same way that I have felt almost after every single Celtics loss, which is they make mistakes and shoot themselves in the foot. I still have confidence that they'll be able to respond in a really big way, but I'm also tired of having confidence that they will respond in a really big way and putting themselves in these positions.
Yeah, I'm with you. Listen, I had them in six going in. I'm on Celtics in the series. I've been on them the last two nights as well. Obviously, I split. They're the better team, but not by a long shot because Steph Curry's the best player on the floor. Steph Curry's been unbelievable. I mean, I never bought this narrative. You and I discussed this. I forget whose show it was, but we discussed this before the series. The idea that Steph Curry had pressure on him and could somehow hurt his legacy was insane. All he could do is enhance his legacy. I mean, he's a great player. Klay Thompson's no longer the player he once was, though, right? Draymond Green, oh my God, I'm sure we'll get to that. He's been awful for the most part. And so Steph has carried more weight than people know. Sure, they got fortunate not having to play Phoenix, but we've seen that in the past. I mean, every team gets lucky to an extent. Heck, Boston didn't have to go up against Chris Middleton. And so Golden State, if we're honest, probably has no business being in this position. A lot of nights they're going with Jordan Poole as the secondary scorer. Dude was in the G League not that long ago. What Steph Curry's doing is phenomenal. Listen, I don't hate my position. I'm not going to play the game. If I did, I'd say Boston would be the side, I think, with value, according to my numbers anyway. But right now, you got to think with two or three in San Francisco, this series is probably a coin flip. So therefore, the value isn't taking the plus money with Boston. But the series itself is probably a coin flip. But one thing, JBT, forget about home court advantage meeting 4.5 to 5 points, depending upon pace, because a lot of guys have noticed that home court, and it was like this last year, has meant an awful lot in the postseason. I don't know how much it means in this particular series. Boston, for whatever reason, seems to be more comfortable on the road. And even Golden State, now they've only lost that one game at home, but that was to Boston. I don't know that your handicap in looking at home court meaning too much in this series.
Yep, it's a fair point. So let's focus on Curry for a second. And one of the narratives, conversations that has come out of these last few games has been, Udoka's got to stop dropping on him. Horford's got to stop dropping on Curry. And I kind of see both sides of this, Tom. Where do you stand? Because I see the fact that drop coverage eliminates those 3-on-4 situations that the Warriors love so much, right? Like, if you're going to send two guys at Curry, right, well, the ball starts ping-ponging around. It's where Draymond Green looks his best in terms of the offense. At the same time, I think you can tweak it a little bit. But there's certain plays. Like, he hit, like, a sidestep three against Horford, who actually played him pretty tight on a couple of drops, and he just drains them. What have you thought about their defensive approach? Because I think at the end of the day, when you look at some of the numbers, I think they're actually doing the right thing.
I actually do not like the drop coverage at all, though. I hear what you're saying. Like, I understand there's an argument to be made. But generally speaking, I am not a drop coverage guy, especially against Steph Curry. I'd make those other guys beat me. If they get an advantage, all right, I'll live with a Draymond Green 5-foot runner, to be honest with you. I'd take that over a sidestep 35-foot three-point shot from Steph Curry at this point. So, you know, I get where you're coming from. And in Ime Udoka, I trust. I mean, this guy is a phenomenal defensive coach. There's no question. I mean, bottom line is he should have been the coach in Philadelphia. They should have got rid of Doc Rivers, kept him. I mean, this guy's been phenomenal, learned under Greg Popovich for a long time. So I tend to trust him. I don't personally love the drop cover stuff. I love seeing Marcus Smart fight through that screen. I love seeing that sort of energy from Smart. He's been a linchpin. Robert Williams, we know how good he is defensively. They're a pleasure to watch on that end.
So last note on Curry before we get to more of the Celtics aspect of this. Has he entered Jerry West territory? Can he win this finals MVP even if they lose the series?
No, because humans vote for the award, and they've proven that already by giving Andre Iguodala the award over LeBron. I know I harp on this too much, but again, anybody who voted for Andre Iguodala that year, and I'll be 100% serious, it should never get a vote again. That was so asinine, it was ridiculous, but that set the tone. Remember now, 1969 was the first year we had finals MVP. He won. We haven't seen it since, and it's almost like it's a law now. You can't give it to somebody on the losing side. If you're not going to give it to LeBron when he averaged, what was it, 36, 13, and 9 in those wins or whatever it was, you can't give it to Steph Curry, I wouldn't think. But I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing it because, to me, he's clearly the best player in the series.
So as we kind of build on that then, one of the things that I've kind of harped on each of the last few games, I have no idea, and I get liability is baked into some of these, but if you're telling me true odds for finals MVP – the most likely Celtic to win this award, should they win this series, is Jaylen Brown, not Jason Tatum, correct?
It should be. It should be. What is the best number, JVT, right now that I could get if I were to search on Jaylen Brown?
I have seen in the range of about 8-1. I know the odds that we just showed right now at BetMGM have him at 7-1, But like, if you're telling me the odds we have right now, minus 145 on Steph Curry over at BetMGM, Jason Tatum plus 185, Jaylen Brown at 7-1, even at 7-1, that gap between Tatum and Brown, that is not that big. That's, again, liability's baked into this, Tom, but it, like, that's a really good number on a guy who has arguably been the most consistent player for the – not arguably, has been the most consistent player for the Boston Celtics.
Oh, listen, at BetMGM, I think you said, didn't limit me. I'd be on that already. I'm going to look for another book that has a similar 7-1, 8-1, whatever it might be. That's a heck of a number. I mean, bottom line is you're 100% right. Now, again, you know this. Humans vote for this award. And in theory, if they win two more games, Jason Tatum likely plays very well. I do believe there's a lot of truth to the idea Tatum's due for a big bounce back game. But where we stand today, 7 or 8-1, yeah, that's more than actionable because he's been their best player. And Boston still, at worst, to me, is 50-50, at worst, to win this series. So bottom line is that's where the value lies. You can't take Tatum. I mean, I know a lot of knuckleheads will do that. Because he's Jason Tatum, he's the biggest name, and he's got the best game, quite frankly. But the best player doesn't always play the best in the finals, and this is a clear example of that.
Well, I think some of the knuckleheads will go like, hey, you know, Jordan Poole, if he's got some pretty big games down the stretch, will probably get the 401. That's a pretty good shot we're taking. Not the case. All right. So I was talking adjustments before we had you on, and one of the adjustments we saw Steve Kerr make was, you know what, screw it. He's been my guy for a while, but we can't do this anymore. Draymond, you're getting benched for 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. We're rolling with Looney, and we're going to outscore the Celtics by 7. We're going to take a lead in those minutes, and then we're going to go offense, defense. What do you think Draymond's role is now as we move forward here, and we've seen Kerr finally start to budge a little bit in terms of cutting down the minutes for Draymond Green, especially in big situations?
I'm going to guess that he's going to trust Draymond Green until he thinks he can't trust him anymore. By that, I mean, if it's fourth quarter and he's still struggling and looking like the Draymond Green we've seen for the most part when you look at this series, then I think he'll look to get somebody else involved, and no question. I don't think he'll be shy at this point. He doesn't want to do that. Draymond's very opinionated. The last thing he wants is for Draymond to go on his podcast 5 minutes later and talk about his benching, and that be big news. He'd rather avoid that, and I think there's a lot of trust between the two, and for obvious reasons. I think, if anything, he gives them extra leeway. I'd be surprised if the numbers are cut drastically. I'm talking about the minutes until the fourth. If he's struggling, then I think he'll put him on the bench for another 5 minute, 6 minute stretch. And dare I say, if he struggled worse than he's been, he might not even see the crunch time numbers. And boy, that would be interesting if he didn't get minutes in the final couple of series. But at the same time, I think it is fair to expect him to bounce back a little bit, JBT, right? I mean, he has been so bad. Think about it. We all know he's going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, considering who they have put in, Draymond Green's getting into the conversation, and he's getting in at the end of the day. And so from that perspective, can you remember a Hall of Famer who's still supposedly in his physical prime playing this ridiculously bad? I can't.
Micah Adams put out the tweet, I think it was after game three, that he had a historically bad game. Nobody with 34 minutes in an NBA Finals game had put up more or less than 5 points, five rebounds, and five assists in a contest. It was incredible, but... yeah, it's been pretty bad for Draymond, so we'll see. He is pretty good, though, so we'll see. He's probably going to bounce back. Tom, we got 30 seconds left, so I'll let you go. Appreciate it, man.
Anytime, JBT.
You got it. One Tom Byrne, the number one, up on Twitter is where you want to follow him, BYRNE. All right, we'll come back. Second hour, we'll dive a little bit deeper into those finals MVP numbers because that's a shocking number to look at with Jaylen Brown at 7-1. And we'll dive into more player props, and we'll talk about the Game 5 matchup from a totals perspective. It's Hardwood Handicap.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.